Mitzvah Shin Nun Dalet 354. Mitzvahs Mayrich Batim Shiten Berach Shariche Makoin Betoseves Chomesh. So, continuing in our series of mitzvahs related to Arachin, which are the evaluation of donations to the Beis Hamikdash. We talked about people, we talked about animals. So, here we're going to talk about houses. How does it work if you pledge the value of a house to the Beis Hamikdash? So you sanctify your house to the Beis HaMikdash, and then you decide, you know, you'd rather give the monetary value than actually give the house over. So either he or his wife or heirs can redeem the house from the Hekdash. Shemayrich osa ha-kohen v'nosen lo kefi ha-ayrich shiyomar hu ve'od chomesh. So the Kohen, again, we find that the same way as regarding the animals, so the Kohen is responsible for determining the value of this item, as opposed to there are certain things that which we have learned and will learn, have a set value. So people have a set value. Also people, you don't actually donate the person to the Beis HaMikdash when you're a Mayrichet, you mean you just give the value straight off the bat. So people and fields, generally, some fields have a set value, but animals and houses have a value that's actually determined based on their worth. And you could give the actual worth of a person or an animal, but that means you pledge the damim. That means you pledge the value. It's a different lashon that you use. If you pledge the erech, so it's a set value, but by the houses, even if you pledge the erech, it's not a set value, but rather it goes according to the actual market value of the item. So you have to pay, when you redeem the house, you have to pay the amount of money that the house is worth as determined by the Kohen, plus a chomesh, plus an extra fifth of the value. And what's a math teacher? What is an extra fifth of the value? How do you calculate that? How do you calculate an extra fifth of the value? If the house is worth $100, so what's the value plus a chomesh?
Said it's really like 25%.
Right, it's really $125. It means a fifth of the value after the added amount, not a fifth of the value. So we would call it to add a fourth, but in the lashon of the chumash, it's to add a chumash, to add a fifth, because it's a fifth of the value after the addition. Okay, that's just how different math terms. You know, in English we call it one thing, and in Biblical Hebrew we call it another thing. They have a different way of describing it.
Kodesh.
So it says that if you offer the value of your house to the Beis HaMikdash, okay, so then this procedure is followed. The same reasoning applies as that which I described for the Tmura, for the switching of a Korban. Which we had in a different order. That God wanted people to be very diligent and fearful even when dealing with the Beis HaMikdash. So that means when God gave you the option of redeeming the value. So you could pledge your house and then you are now homeless, but you could redeem the house. It's not like the house will be permanently part of the Beis HaMikdash. So you shouldn't come to undervalue something that you give to the Beis HaMikdash. So you're supposed to add extra. You shouldn't just suffice with the regular value, but you're supposed to add extra. That means when you, as we're going to learn in the next mitzvah, so if you pledge a field, a purchased field, as opposed to ancestral field, it'll describe the different details there. So if you purchase a field and you pledge the Beis HaMikdash, you don't add a chomesh. That it's very unusual that you would pledge the value of that you would pledge a purchased field Beis HaMikdash. So, as opposed to an ancestral field, you know, stays in your family, you know, it comes back to you at the Yovel, so you kind of take it for granted. But something that you purchased with your own money, So sometimes you have a greater affinity for, in this case, well, a field especially, you have a greater affinity for that you worked hard and you saved up and you you purchased the field, as opposed to one that just fell in your lap. It's like a piece of jewelry, you know. If you get a piece of jewelry from your grandmother, you know, either maybe you like it, maybe you don't. Maybe it has sentimental value, maybe it doesn't. Nice, I guess I got it. But if there's one that you saved up and you went to the jewelry designer and you got an exact, you know, you did it exactly according to your taste and you saved up your wages for 10 years in order to be able to afford this piece of jewelry. So sometimes there'll be a greater emotional attachment to this piece. So the same thing, too, when you purchase a field. So the reason the Torah didn't tell you to add a chomesh, had an extra fifth when it's a field you purchased yourself, is because it's unusual, very unusual, that you even consider parting with a field that you purchased yourself. So therefore, we don't need this extra safeguard of requiring you to add extra value when you want to redeem it. Midine ha-mitzvah, the halachos are as follows. Masha amru zifarim levracha. That if you sanctify your house or an animal, a non-kosher animal, or objects, so all these things, the erech is not a fixed value, but the erech goes according to their actual commercial value. Bein tov uvein ra, so whether good or bad. Ani notla la'atzmi. So the way it would be redeemed in terms of the value, the money that you give to the Beis HaMikdash, would be by auction. You would conduct an auction of these items, and the first bidder, you require the first bid to be placed by the person who has makdish them, the previous owner, because he is presumably going to start the bidding high, and you'll eventually get more of a value for the Beis HaMikdash because of the emotional attachment to these things. So he gets to place the first bid. It's about how much he would pay for it, which is probably going to be higher than someone else. And the amount of money is going to the temple treasury for, not for korbanos, but for general repairs and stuff. About Bisman Azel, Amr Zichron al Bracha, Shein Magdish, and nowadays you're not supposed to sanctify anything to the Beis HaMikdash. The Nirvadai Shim Avar Vihikdish is Beiso Bisman Azel, Abedek Abai, Shemarich Nosa Beshavia, the Avid Kitakan to the Shmuel. So the procedure would be, if you sanctify your house to the Beis HaMikdash, that you would go according to the actual value of your house. And then you have two options. One option is to do according to the rectification procedure that Shmuel suggested, which would be to take a coin worth more than a pruta and say, I am de-consecrating my house on this coin, and then you get rid of the coin.
You say
de-consecrating. Oh, mashlich kol melech. Or you, let's say your house is worth $500,000. So you go to the bank and you say, I'd like $500,000 worth of coins. And they give you a lot of quarters. What is that? That'd be 2 million quarters. And they give you 2 million quarters, and you take those 2 million quarters and you throw them into the ocean. So the answer, the preferable procedure for most people would be just to take the one coin and to deconsecrate. V'vein shahaya habayis barichoma bein shahaya bariachatzerim la'olam yecholin labaylim o yorshim ligol osa miyad hahektesh. So whether this house that you consecrated was in a walled city or in an unwalled city, just a regular house, so you can redeem it from the hektesh. So you remember the rule, thinking back of a few mitzvos previously. So there's a difference between a house in a walled city and a house in an unwalled city. So a house in a walled city is an exception to the rules of Yovel. That a house in a walled city, if you sell it to someone else, then if you have a year to buy it back, and if you don't buy it back at the end of the year, so it completely transfers to the ownership of the purchaser. So it does not go back in the ovel. That's one of the unique rules of a house in a walled city. So that means if you sanctify a house in a walled city to Hekdesh, remember, a house that's not subject to the normal rules of Yovel, and then somebody says, now the Hekdesh says, hey, you know, what am I doing with this house? The Beis HaMikdash can't use a house per se. I want to sell it and get the money. So they have this auction and someone else buys it. So someone else buys it. So now it's as if, even though it went through the intermediate ownership of Hekdesh, of the Beis HaMikdash, it's as if the first owner used to own it, and now the second owner bought it from the first owner. So that means that the second owner owns it for 12 months, the person who redeemed it from the Hekdesh, if he owns it now for 12 months, it is permanently the property of the purchaser and will not return to the first owner in the Yovel. But if it's a regular house in a non-walled city, so then if a person purchases it from the Hekdesh, so they get to use it for however many years until the Yovel, but once the Yovel comes, so it goes back to the original owner. So the pasuk uses a very interesting, not very interesting, but somewhat interesting lashon when describing this mitzvah, when it says that when you sanctify a person, when he sanctifies his house. Why doesn't it say when he sanctifies a house? Why does it say when he sanctifies his house? Obviously,
you couldn't sanctify it unless you owned it.
You can't sanctify it unless it's your house. So what do you mean? You only sanctify your house. So why does it say emphasize his house? Diktiku zichanim levracha, the chachamim tell us, ma beiso birshuso af kol davar shadam rotze lahagdish tzarech sheyeh birshuso. Not only does it have to be belong to you, but it has to be in your possession. Oh, they'll explain. But if it's not in your possession, even though it belongs to you, then you cannot be makdishit. If somebody steals your property, so the owner, there's the owner, the person who was the victim of the theft, and then there's the thief. So there are rules about when the item now transfers to the ownership of the thief. There's a procedure which is basically based on when the original owner gave up hope of ever receiving the item back. Mm. When you give up hope of ever receiving the item back, then the thief acquires possession of the object. Now he owns the object and now only has to pay you the monetary value. He doesn't get off scot-free.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that, you know, now he, oh, after you give up hope, oh, no, okay. You know, now the thief gets away with it. That's not how it works. It just means that the thief doesn't have to return the actual object, but rather just has to return the monetary value.
Seems like there's two sins here. One is stealing it, and the other is, it's very cute. I wanted your object, and you didn't want to sell it to me. So I coveted it. So I did this little trick, you know, and now I'm giving.
I mean, there's a lot of other sins there. We're talking about the monetary, the technical monetary value
even
over here.
Even though you gave him the actual monetary.
No, I understand, but you mentioned many sins. There's still even if he eventually acquires ownership of the object, he's still not. You're still not allowed to steal. You're still not allowed to covet. A lot of sins involved,
right.
So you may go to hell, you know what I mean? But it's not, you just don't have to pay back the monetary value.
You mean you don't have to give the object?
You don't have to pay back the object, you just have to pay the monetary value.
Suppose the guy says, hey, I don't want the monetary value, I want that book that was in the family for 100 years.
Well, then maybe he didn't give up hope.
Exactly. I don't give up hope. If I lose a book, I have a book, there's two books I have that I lent somebody 30 years ago. I still would like to get them back. I'm not
30 years
ago about it. It was 1985, something like that. I know who has them because I happen to jot it down in a place where I used to keep notes about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I don't hate them and I'm not, you know, obsessing.
Yeah, but they don't mean to steal. If you ask for it back, they give it back.
But the thing is, and supposing that I don't remember where this came from, although I always write my hands. and they gave it to the goodwill, and they did whatever, or they passed it on. In some sense, I especially the books, I don't give a robe.
Okay. It depends, yeah.
Even if it was something like a book with my name in it that I left on the subway by mistake, I'm not really giving up hope, but...
You have the thief. So the thief now has the book. We'll use the book as an example. So Mrs. Birnbaum, a thief steals the book from Mrs. Birnbaum. So Mrs. Birnbaum has not given up hope of getting it back. So the book still belongs to Mrs. Birnbaum. There's no shy about that. And the thief has possession of the book, but it does not belong to him. So both of them cannot be makdashit. They cannot sanctify this the book, because in order to sanctify something, it has to be both belonging to you and in your possession. That's the answer to the question.
Got it.
This applies only to movable objects. But real estate is never considered to be, you know, karka in an exelis. It cannot be stolen. So it's always considered to be in the possession of the original owner. So even if you gave it as you placed it in their trust, you know, you just left it in their care. So if it's something where you could go to the Bezdin and they could give it back to you right away, if they heard your arguments, that's considered to be in your possession and you can sanctify the object. It's all found in Maseches Erchin. This is in the times when there's a Yovel. You're not supposed to sanctify a house unless it's at a time where the Jubilee year is in effect. So if you violated this and you didn't give the proper value to the Beis HaMikdash that was determined by the Kohen, then you violated this commandment and you also misused holy property, and that's also considered to be a big sin. But nowadays, so this procedure, the way it's supposed to be done, it cannot be done. Nowadays we don't have the Kohanim assessing the value of objects, so then the only way to do it, if you sanctified your house, there's no Batei Arichoma at all. They don't be regular houses. So if you sanctified your house, then you would have no choice but to do the redemption on a coin, and then you throw the coin into the ocean.
Suppose somebody, you throw it in the ocean, but your aim isn't very good, like mine.
Somebody
picks
it up.
What? No, and somebody, they pick it up. They find it and they pick it up. What do they know?
The point, you throw it in the ocean. If you throw it on the beach, that's no good. You have to make sure it goes into the ocean. Okay, it's possible, I suppose, that someone will be shipwrecked on a desert island and then your coin will wash up on their shore, or it will be eaten by a fish and then someone will catch the fish and they'll find the coin. I mean, crazy things, but we assume that you don't have to be choshesh for such extraordinary possibilities. Mitzvah Shinnun Hei, 355. Mitzvah Mayrech Sodeh. What about if you've pledged the value of a field? So there, here, you have a set value that the Torah prescribes a particular erech. So the Torah prescribes that if you, again, the field will go back to the original owner at the Jubilee year. So if you pledge a field, if you at the beginning of the Jubilee cycle, so you have 49 years to go, 49 years of usage of this field before it automatically goes back to the original owner. So the set value is the value of a chomer, which is a certain measurement of area that was planted with barley, and that would be 50 shekels worth. Its worth is of 50 shekels. So prorating that per year, if you sanctify the field later in the Jubilee cycle, so you don't have as many years left, so you have to prorate this amount per year. So it comes out to a sela, which is the coin, not a biblical coin, but the coin that was used in the times of Chazal. Lefisha shekel amar batoro nikra sela stam beloshen chachamim. So what's called the shekel in the Chumash is called a sela in the times of Chazal. It was just a different name for a similar coin. It's called the Geira in the Torah, which is a subdivision of the shekel. So it's a ma in rabbinic terminology. So in order to make the biblical, there was a coin in the times of Chazal. They didn't anymore use the coins, the exact types of coins that they use in biblical times. So they said, let's just make things easy. So we don't have to make all these complicated calculations will drive our accountants crazy. You know, everything will be in cents and divisions of the coins. So we have this coin called the sela, which is in common use nowadays. So the sela is close enough to the shekel. So we're just going to say that anytime in the Chumash it talks about a shekel, instead we're going to use a sela.
There was no Beis HaMikdash anymore, right?
Why not?
You said no. As opposed to biblical times.
There was a Beis HaMikdash until the year 70.
Yeah.
So there were Chachamim before that time. Mm-hmm. In what we call the rabbinic period, where we talk about the formulation of the Mishnah. That goes back well before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. So which was, the Sela, in terms of value, was 1/6. Again, the Jewish sixth. Which is what we would call a fifth.
Because of that.
I mean, no, a fifth. What would we call
20%
a fifth?
20% is...
We would call... 20%. I'm not so good at math. We should have private tutoring or something, you know? So the... I never was so good at it. Okay. Basic arithmetic you need to learn. People who are not math inclined don't need to learn more than that. Okay. She agrees. Some people are into math. Some people need a more complex math. But if you're not planning to... I knew since I was 6 years old, I wasn't going to have my field of choice was not going to have anything to do with math. So I didn't... all the years where I had to learn algebra and geometry and these things like that were a complete waste of time. Fine.
At least they weren't absolute misery.
I wouldn't go so far. They weren't pleasant. I asked my mother once. She's also not very much not a math person. So she was one of her speeches, you know, telling me I have to do my homework and be diligent. You know, I have to learn all they teach me in school because you never know when you're going to use it. So I said, Mom, when was the last time you ever used any math after college, any math that was beyond basic arithmetic? Never. Okay.
I guess percentages is basic arithmetic.
Yeah, that counts. Never. Okay. So anyway, we need to rethink the educational system. Fine. So they added a Jewish sixth to the value of the biblical shekel, and they made an equivalent to the value of the sela, which was the coin that they used in the times of Chazal. The sela is a shava arba dinarin. So a dinar is like a quarter in relationship to a sela. The dinar is sheish moin, and a dinar is sixth moin. The amashne pundionin pun. Yeah, pundionin. The sama is six. Two pundions. Nimsa lechol shana sela upundion. So if you do the math, so it comes out that the value of the field per year is one sela and one pundion. Shafal pisha sela memches pundionin lefi cheshboneinu. Even though that the sela is 48 pundionin. Mikomokom arutz alikach sela mina shulchani. The reason we have to add a little bit extra is because that if you want to exchange your local money for a sela, which was the coin that was used in the Beis HaMikdash, so you want to go to a money changer and you want to buy a sela, so you have to pay memtes pundionin. The money changer takes a commission. Same as nowadays, money changers take commissions. That's how their business works. So they take a commission of one pundion. So that the shulchani gets one pundion per transaction. V'achar per sela in the transaction. V'achar shu tzorich l'adez mem tes pundionin, since you have to give one You have to get 49 pundionin in order to get a selah. So since you really have to give a little more in order to get this value, you have to transfer this value towards your pledge to the Beis HaMikdash. Because when it comes to monetary transactions, the Hekdesh is always given the advantage. The Beis HaMikdash, you never give a little less. You always have to give a little more when there's any question of the value that you would have to give to the Beis HaMikdash. V'achar HaMakdish, V'achar HaMakdish, Sade Tova, She'ein B'chol Eretz Yisrael Kemosa. And this is irrelevant whether you have to, whether you're the field that you're pledging is the best field in all of Eretz Yisrael, the most lush, fertile, best looking field in all of Eretz Yisrael. You have to pay the same value. It's like a person. When you donate a person's erech to the Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't matter how they look, it doesn't matter how strong they are. It only depends on age and gender. Period. Osa derosh ein kamosa laroa. So even if it's a terrible, terrible field that's rocky and just not gonna get much out of it in terms of produce, kaze ma'arichen osa. You give the erech according to the set value. Shelo rotz akosu lechalik binyan zeh v'ishlo kol akarkos le'erech echad. And the Torah says that you use the same value for all types of fields. V'achar shepirashnu ashkolim roi shenafar shira chomer kamahu. Okay, we explained the money, but what about the size of the field? V'da Shachomer who mida achas shenikreis kur. The chomer in the words of the sages is called a kur. The kur ushnei lesachim, two lesachs is a kur. The lesach tesvav sein. A lesach is 15 sein. Nimsa hachomer shloshim sein. The chomer is 30 se'ah. Shehin yud eifa. There are the 10 eifas. Sheifa shalosh sein and eifa is 3 sein. Yadua hadavar. The sages tell us, so a se'ah is 50 amos by 50 amos, so 250 there, basic arithmetic. See, I need to use basic arithmetic sometimes, is 250 square 50 by... Okay, you're right. Should have been paying more attention in fourth grade. Forget the high school. Is 2,500 square amos. That's a se'ah. Klomer shumi zera se'ah se'orim vein alpayim v'chamesh meos ama betishbor. Yeah, even tells you the over here that it's 2,500. I didn't even need to do the arithmetic. See, shouldn't go out on a limb and just continue reading on the Sefer HaChinuch. So why does the Sefer HaChinuch tell you the size of a Sa'ah in Maseches Erevin? I have my little citation over here to the Gemara in Maseches Erevin. Who knows? There's a famous halacha. It's a very obscure halacha, but people seem to have an interest in it because it affects their ability to carry on Shabbos, that you have...
No longer obscure.
You have a karpef. There's a rule called a karpef. A karpef is an area that is enclosed, completely fenced in and enclosed, but is uninhabitable.
Oh, yeah. That's not so obscure. Well, I'm on the air checking committee, so
you don't count. Okay.
These things come up.
So it's uninhabitable. It's either like a vegetable garden or a lake, maybe. There's places where you could not have normally. You wouldn't use it for human habitation.
Well, that was the issue with Fort. That's part of the issue with Fort Tryon Park. Can you?
Fort Tryon Park
is not.
They're
always talking about can you extend the Arif to include Fort Tryon Park, and I believe that issue has come up that there are areas of it that are. I mean, there. You, even if you put something around it,
could
it's
be.
Still, like people don't live there.
Could be. So the rule is that a karpef that's bigger than two se'ahs, you're not allowed to carry there on Shabbos, even if it's completely enclosed by a fence. If it's smaller than two saws, you're allowed, but if it's bigger than two saws, then you're not allowed to carry there on Shabbos. This is a rule derabanan. On a deraisa level, any area that's enclosed, you're allowed to carry there on Shabbos. But the Chachamim said that if it's an area, an uninhabitable area, more than two saws, even if it's completely enclosed, you're not allowed to carry there on Shabbos. So you shouldn't get confused, since it's only derabanan. So, for example, if you're standing in a carpet that's completely enclosed, so you're not allowed to throw a ball into a Rishus Rabim over the fence. If you do that, you'll be chayav chatos. That's considered to be a biblical violation because you're on a deraisa level, it's an enclosed area to an unenclosed area. So then you'd be liable for the transgression, even though midrabanan, you're not allowed to carry there.
How does it come to pass? In this case, the rabbinic thing is stricter when often the rabbinic thing is more lenient, like an eye for an eye.
Okay, let's not get into that right now. But the
that was the most extreme example.
Sometimes that happens. Mm-hmm. So that's why sometimes when you have a garden in the middle of area that you want to enclose with an eruv, so they have to construct a little mini eruv to enclose the karpef separately. So it shouldn't, because you have a problem. Because if you have an area that's enclosed that has a karpef in it, then it undoes the whole area.
What does uninhabitable mean? I mean, if
there's different opinions about what exactly constitutes a karpef, but like a garden, like I said.
But you could be going into...
Something that's planted, so you wouldn't walk there. You wouldn't use it to stroll. A park where people go to stroll would not be a karpef.
Oh, okay. Or like the basketball court or something.
That's not a karpef. People use that all the time.
Okay. People close, live there.
So that's why, so certain maps of the Erevin that you see, like in the five towns, so it says on the Erev map, you know, there'll be a little area where it says, you know, this area is enclosed by a separate Erev to set it off from the rest of the Erev, because if there were no distinction between the Karpef and the rest of the Erev, then the whole area might be a problem. So it says, it's like little enclosures within the Erev where you're not allowed to carry, so that's on the Erev map. So it's Just an interesting thing to keep in mind. I don't think that we have any of these issues here in the city. I don't know, in the park, I know there could be some areas that are carpeted, but in general, the park wouldn't be a problem with carpeting. Impossible?
No.
There's a will, there's a way, remember?
Yeah.
If you people really wanted to carry in Fort Tryon Park, so they could make it happen.
No, I'm sure I thought the problem was the city. They ran into a problem with the city allowing them to...
That's not impossible. I don't know. I just don't know the answer.
The Parks Department was very resistant.
What?
I can understand that.
My memory is the Parks Department was so resistant that it was
impossible.
Just judged. It was not worth the trial or dealing with.
As opposed to little parks, which are sometimes like playgrounds, which are sometimes fenced in on their own accord, so they're a really good area. I remember, so when Sachi could just walk, so sometimes we would take him to the... We have playgrounds, a couple of playgrounds by us, by Wayo, that are completely fenced in with a gate, Mohudar, Eruv. So, you know, we want to get him out on Shabbos, so we walk him, and finally he'd get into the gate, and he just, you know, collapsed. And so then we could carry him once he gets inside the playground fence.
Got to carry
until
you get there.
No, he walked till he got to the playground, but then once he's in the playground, it's sometimes we want to be carried. Yeah.
What are you going to carry if you didn't bring anything?
No, the kid.
I'll be carrying the kid.
Oh, the kids are
carrying
the kid.
Fine. So, Nimsa Shemokam Aroy Lizra Chomer Seorim, who Shloshim Sein, Yishbu Chamisha Veshivim Elef Ama Betishbor. So, this area that's a Chomer that's assigned this value is 75,000 square amos, which is not that much. V'chitza derech ha-cheshbon v'erkei sodos. How do you do it when you assess the erech of a field? De achuza choluk binyano misnei mikna. So a field that you received as an inheritance, meaning that it's part of your Yerusha of Eretz Yisrael, is different from a field that you purchased. You're on your own. You only measure the areas that are plantable. These are the areas where this is the steachuza. So this weather, good or bad, and then you add a chomesh in addition to this erech. So he tells you over here that when it says a chomesh in the Torah, it means a fourth of the value of the object. A fifth of the added of the total value once you add on the extra. And if the whole field that you consecrate is not plantable, then you just use its value as opposed to the set erech that's given in the Torah. Bezui nikres de'achuza, zesadash yarsh adam imorishav. Ste'achuza is your chelek of Eretz Yisrael. Uzde mikna usadash shelakach adam ishelo, and uzde mikna is one that you purchased of your own accord. Or oshazachaba mishum tzad, bishum tzad shelo machmas yerusha. You managed to get it in any other way. If you win it in the lottery, or someone decides to give it to you as a gift, then this will also be considered to be a stay mikna. Mikna is the lashon of acquisition. Even though you didn't purchase it, you would still have acquired it in a way other than your inheritance of the land. V'dina makdish de mikna. So, and if you sanctify your purchased field, sheshamin osa b'shava, you just assess its value. Roin kama shava ad shnas ayovel. It goes by how many years you have left until the ovel, how much you could sell it for at that time. And you don't add a chomesh, as we explained in the last mitzvah, because it's unusual that a person would want to sell their purchased field. And then the value goes to the temple treasury used for the temple repairs, like everything else. And when the yovel comes, so it goes back to the original owner. Whether it's purchased by another person who redeems it from the temple treasurer. Or it could go straight from the temple treasury back to the original owner. But either way, whether it had an additional owner in the presence or not, it always goes back to the original owner. And it does not become the value of the Kohanim, the property of the Kohanim. So as they achuza, I'm sorry, as they mikna is not really yours. You only had temporary use of it until the Ovel, so you can't offer it to the Beis HaMikdash. It's not yours to give permanently. But if you purchased your Stei Achuza, which really would come to you, it really does belong to you, and would return to you in the Ovel if you transacted it normally. So since it really is yours to do as you please with, because it fundamentally belongs to you, as evidenced by the fact that it would come back to you in the Ovel. So if you find yourself at the Ovel and you cannot redeem this field, and you don't have anyone else to redeem it, or if you don't redeem it from the person who purchased it from the temple treasury, then it becomes the property of the Kohanim. The Kohanim pay their value, but they get to use the field however they want. But the Beis HaMikdash still has to get its money. It doesn't just go transferred to the Kohanim scot free. They pay the money, but they get to use the field. So when you are going to assess the value for the temple treasury, how much you have to pay for it, so you announce that it's for sale 60 days morning and evening to see what prices people will give to it. So everyone will listen. And you know those, what's it called, the chalk things that you use on the ground sometimes to mark playing fields? I used to use it in my school. It had this little machine. So I don't know if they do that anymore. I mean, I haven't seen grass in who knows how long, living here in the city. So you mark off the boundaries of the field so everybody will see what they're getting themselves into if they're redeeming it from the Hekdesh. And you say, this is a great field for planting grapes. So people who are vintners are going to be like, grapes. They're going to give a high price for it. Then people who are more interested in planting figs, are not going to give as high a price for it, because maybe it doesn't, this land is not so good for pigs. B'chol arotza likach yovel v'yikach, and anyone who wants to buy is gonna buy it. B'yaser pratei mevarim mishlam b'masech tabnu yozev b'masech hazerchen. It's all explained very well in Masech hazerchen. B'megez b'zuchar munekevos, this is for males and females, in all places and times. Fundamentally, it's in the time that the yovel is applicable. You don't do these things nowadays. As we explained before. If you nowadays you violated this and you sanctified land to the temple treasury. Then you could unsanctify it using more than a pruta. And you throw it into the sea. And if you don't want to do that, then you throw the whole value into the ocean. And why you wouldn't want to do that is beyond me, but okay. You might ask the following question. Say, why destroy it? Take the value. Say your field is worth $1,000. Go to the bank and get 4,000 quarters. And put them under your mattress. Put them under your mattress and say, I'm not destroying them. It's perfectly good money. I know it's consecrated to the Beis HaMikdash. So, Meira Yibane Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash might be destroyed, might be rebuilt shortly. So, I'm going to keep this money and I'm going to use it. I'm going to donate it to the temple when the temple is rebuilt. Let them have the 4,000 quarters as opposed to throwing them to the bottom of the Hudson River. So, what good does that do anyone? So, he says, not so fast. You know, it's a good idea in theory, but in the meantime, it's much more likely that people are going to use it inappropriately. Let's say you go on vacation and you have a house sitter, and the house sitter is sleeping on your mattress. This mattress is lumpy. 4,000 quarters? Oh my gosh, 4,000 quarters. Well, he's not going to notice if, 50 of them go missing, and you take it and you go buy yourself candy.
And the next person, and everybody does that.
Right, so or you die and your heirs come and discover these 4,000. Whoa! I didn't know that we were rich. We had 4,000 quarters. You know, this is a great Yerusha. It's a good inheritance for me. So the chances are that people are going to lose track of it. And people are going to do me'ilah, that they're going to use improperly consecrated things. So therefore, it's better to just get rid of it. And he says also that you shouldn't be concerned about the financial well-being of the Beis HaMikdash in the future, because he says when the third Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt in Mashiach Tzeit, right? So then we're going to have plenty of money, and we won't have to worry about. We won't have to worry about exactly the funds that we will have to give to the Beis HaMikdash will be taken care of.